So tonight's talk will be given by Senior Dharma Teacher Bob Waldinger.
Last night, Steve explored this puzzling and amazing and essential teaching that we are already Buddhas. And today, Diane explored how one can be with life just as it is, and a kind of peace that can come with that. Tonight, I'd like to explore that person of no rank that we have been hearing about, because it very much relates to those two concepts. So I'm going to read to you again from Master Lin Ji. One day, the Zen master came into the Dharma hall and said, "On this lump of red flesh is a real person of no position who comes in and out right before your face. Whoever has not seen that person should look carefully. Have a good look." At that point, a monk came up and asked, "What is that real person of no position?" The master stepped down from the meditation platform, took hold of the monk and said, "Speak, speak, what is that person with no position?" The monk was perplexed. The master let go of him and said, "The real person with no position is no more than dry excrement on a stick." Having spoken, he went back to his room immediately. Actually, David told us this morning about another translation of lump of red flesh. It was translated as meatball. "On this meatball is a real person of no position who comes in and out right before your face." Our Tenzo, Jason, cautioned us not to use the meatball translation, worrying that it would arouse the desire for meat in the bodhisattvas of this sesshin. Well, this idea of the person of no position, the true person of no rank, made me remember for the first time in a long time an experience I had, the first time I'd ever been in the presence of the Dalai Lama. And I was one of 700 people in the presence of the Dalai Lama, so I was just one of the crowd, but it was at a conference at Harvard Medical School. Very illustrious people were on the stage with him. All of them in their suits and ties and the women in their business suits. Leaders in, actually it was mental health, at Harvard Medical School. And the dean got up, the dean of Harvard Medical School, who would never describe himself as a person of no position. I can assure you. And he got up, and the Dalai Lama, everyone else is sitting in chairs, and the Dalai Lama is in this great overstuffed easy chair. And he's sitting there in his robes, and his translator is next to him. And the dean of Harvard Medical School begins to read a proclamation extolling the virtues of the Dalai Lama. It would have been appropriate if he had started out, hear ye, it was so formal. Talking about his influence on mankind and the world. And so the Dalai Lama heard his through his translator what was being said. He listened attentively for a few moments. And then he started fidgeting and he started scratching and he was cleaning out one ear and found some earwax that he kind of made disappear in his robe somewhere. And I was just astonished. And then, and at one point, he was adjusting his robes, and there are a lot of those orange robes to adjust. And I mean, if he had started scratching private parts, I would not have been surprised, because he was doing everything else. And at first I thought, this man is being so rude. So the dean, and the dean took no notice. He was reading his proclamation, and when he was done, each of the leading lights of mental health was allowed to ask the Dalai Lama one question. And they asked from different theoretical perspectives, from the perspective of self-psychology, from the perspective of psychoanalysis, from a feminist theory perspective. And they would ask these very formal questions, and he, through his translator, would try. He was making his best effort, but it was clear that there was very little communication going on. And then there was a time for the audience, and a woman stood up and said, "Your Holiness, my son died in a plane crash, and I can't bear the grief." And suddenly the room came alive, and suddenly the Dalai Lama was right there with her, hearing her cry, responding with compassion, and absolutely riveted in a way he hadn't been the entire morning. Two persons of no rank meeting each other in the most real moment I had seen all day. And I've come to think that the Dalai Lama wasn't meaning to be rude to the dean of Harvard Medical School. He just saw that the dean of Harvard Medical School had put on a head on top of his own head. He'd put on his official dean's head, and he was speaking to a head that he had put on top of the Dalai Lama. And the Dalai Lama, I imagine, realized, okay, you guys talk to each other, and I'll just hang out here. Perhaps the way Lin Ji slept in the Zendo when it was time for him to sleep. Just came forward spontaneously and let other things go by. The true person of no rank. But if, as Steve promised us last night, we're already Buddhas, and if these great teachers are persons of no rank, then why are we practicing? And why are we going to see our teachers? What is this all about? I noticed in the Lin Ji Lu selections that we've been reading that although Lin Ji sounds tough and he confronts, he's also very clear that he is speaking only from his own view. He says, "The place of this mountain monk is just to encourage you." He says, "As far as the insight of this mountain monk goes," he says, "as far as this speaker is concerned," and then later, "according to my way of seeing." He means this. He steps down from the high seat and he says, "I am showing you what I know, and what I know is from my heart and from my body and from my mind and from my time on this path." No great arhat, no great bodhisattva, just one person of no rank trying so hard to help other people along the path. So later on he says, "My friends, try and apply my insight. Sit still and cut off the heads of every Sambhogakaya and Nirmanakaya body of the Buddha." Cut off their heads? "See that all bodhisattvas in the 10 bodhisattva stages, all the fully awakened and wonderful awakened ones, are just like shackles coming to imprison you. Arhats and self-enlightened ones are like the latrine pit awakening and nirvana are tethering posts for mules. Does he really mean this? Well, from the perspective of emptiness of the absolute, it's all one. No arhats, no bodhisattvas. But he's also talking about the realm of the particular, the realm where we all show up as individuals. He's talking about how desperately we want to put those heads on top of other people's heads. Please, teacher, you have the head of the person who has it all figured out, and you'll just give me the answer. Not only tell me why my mind is like this, but give me a different mind, please. Let me just fit this head right on you and it'll work. Because I really want there to be somebody who doesn't have a heart and a mind and a body like mine. Who doesn't suffer. Who always has it figured out. And who never has waves of emotion and knee pain and stomach upset. And Lin Ji is saying, I am a person of no rank, and I am showing you my insides, and that's how I know what I know to share with you. So, why do we have the high seat where the ancient masters gave talks? He steps down from his high seat and talks about being a person of no rank. Isn't this the height of hypocrisy? Well, I used to think, yeah, that's what we humans, that's what we do. We create hierarchies and Zen is no different. But I've come to think of it very differently. I've come to think that that's what most of us need to enter onto the path. The phrase that came to mind for me when I thought about this was from the Jewel-Mirrored Samadhi, the song of the Jewel-Mirrored Samadhi. It talks about how we're all, in the realm of the particular, attracted by different things. Because some are vulgar, jeweled tables and ornate robes. Because some are wide-eyed cats and white oxen. Because some are Zen students, sticks and robes and high seats. I think this path offers this to us because we need it. Because our ancestors understood from their own examination the deep longing to find somebody on a high seat who has it all figured out. And so they hold that out and we come and we're taught, no, already Buddha. And this life, this is the only life you need to have. And we're taught by people who are having the same lives, who are helping us along the path because they've been in the latrine pits and they show us all the little details of the walls of the latrine pits because they know them. And they've seen the flowers. And they help us sometimes to appreciate both the latrine pits and the flowers. And so, as we go along this path, we come to realize perhaps the greatest teaching, which is that none of us is separate. None of us has a different mind. All of us are in this together on this path. We help guide each other by showing each other our insides. So when Lin Ji says, cut off the heads of those Buddha bodies, cut off the heads that you put on those Buddha bodies. So in a little while, I'm going to go upstairs and I'm going to offer Doksan. If when you enter the Doksan room, you see Bob wearing a crown and sitting on a jeweled throne, kill me. Because in that act of murder, in that moment, you give us both the possibility of two persons of no rank meeting each other intimately. And that is the greatest gift.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, sit comfortably. Speak freely.
Bob, you just reminded me that later on in this collection, the Lin Chi Lu, is the first rendition I know of, if you meet the Buddha on the road, kill him, that Lin Chi is credited with that lovely phrase, yeah. That, yeah. If you meet Bob on the road, kill him.
One of the themes that we've been weaving through, I think, all of the talks is was so beautifully illustrating your story about the Dalai Lama. I think it was really touching. And the simplicity of the moment of his meeting the woman in her great need, and how we complicate our lives and ourselves and our stories of who we are and who others are, and fail to often, be at this level of the person of no rank, where we can, as you said, reach out, and the possibility of connection is there, so perplexing, that what is so simple and so basic and so true to all of us seems so elusive. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that beautiful depiction of it with the, all of, you can just see all of the greats from Harvard up on the stage and the proclamation and this lone woman standing up in her truth, courage to do come forward like that, and how this practice does, it requires us to come forward in that courageous, simple way, and how it can change everything.
Yeah.
Well, you can do it.
Yeah, yeah.
So thank you very much.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I think is so clear in this tradition we've developed in Boundless Way of the Dharma Dialogues is that people come forth with this, with their simple truths, and they are the teisho. And somehow Sishin allows this to happen, and some of the layers that we protect ourselves with to come away and let us just shine forth. Derek, yeah.
Just continuing on with what you just said there, it's so wonderful that, you go to the Doksan room and you don't have to live up to some standard. Here's some wise person sitting across from me and I have to be what I think is as wise or more wise for myself. And it's so, freeing just to just drop the charade and, speak from the heart.
Yeah, thank you for your talk. It was, as you were talking, I could, I got a sense of that, or maybe it's easier to. I was aware how I unconsciously, when I go to the Doksan room, I put the teacher somewhere that I want to have the answer. So when I was now listening to you, and you were describing that, I kind of remembered, like, yeah, that's, these are also just people on the path. Like, it's not like...
And of course we all do this, Prisca, right? So we get to watch ourselves do it. We get to watch those heads arise. Oh, I want to put this kind of head on David when I go see him next. You know, we get to see that and then hopefully see through it, hold it lightly, understand it, and see how it works.
I'm curious how he answered the bereaved woman, because it seems to me there's this possibility in this, with a lack of hierarchy, there's this danger that then the teacher's response is, hey, whatever go, you know, whatever you feel.
Oh, yeah.
You're sad? Cool. Sad's good. You know, angry? Angry's good, yeah. Too. And so I'm curious how the Dalai Lama actually answered the woman. Because I can't live with my grief. I mean, he must have... Did he give her some pearl of insight? Or?
Yeah. You know, he didn't. He didn't. What I can't, and in fact, I can't remember the words he said. I just knew that there was this meeting of hearts where right. he took, you could see him take in her pain and really be with her in it. It was, he didn't give her any pearl, at least not one that I remember.
Yeah.
There was a meeting rather than a, I'm going to give this to you. And in some ways, that's what we do. Our task is to face toward the suffering, to meet it, our own and others.
I hope she did. I hope she didn't leave thinking, I still can't. It's the can't live part. But I guess in meeting her, maybe she could meet herself. So.
Well, can I ask? Were you wondering would she have left? Did you imagine she left saying, I didn't get what I was after? Or,
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But it's clear there's some, you feel some connection to her.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
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 Like, speak about that. You know, because, you know, I just, before you speak about it, I'll give you a few seconds to kind of gather your thoughts. But, so I can, I'll blab on. This
yeah,
is
please. You're the teacher.
Yeah, exactly.
Just to blab.
That's what I was going to say. You know, that we are all on the path together. But some of us have been more aware that we're on the path for longer and have had some of this stuff stripped off of us so that we can be like the Dalai Lama and meet raw suffering without trying to fix it.
Right.
Because that's what I know is healing, not the pearl. So, what would you want is my question.
Yeah.
I guess if I were the woman... I would want him to say, you have every right to feel grief, but I promise you can live with it. That, not to validate all of what she's saying, because sometimes what folks say is, it ought to be corrected. If somebody is saying, I can't live with this, I can't do it, I'm going to go jump off a bridge, you know. Correct that bridge. Grab them if you have to. Get them off the bridge, you know. So sometimes, I don't know, there's almost like a validating or a licensing that can happen. It's like anything goes. And I don't know, I feel wary of that. Like that people need to be corrected. And it is the role of teachers to correct.
Well, you know, Linji is very famous for, and we should... Maybe you know this passage, Dave, where he talks about how people meet, how he meets people in different circumstances. So he never actually says the same thing. Mm. So someone who shows up as needing to be corrected will get corrected.
Right.
Someone whose heart is breaking publicly, then he'll break his heart publicly to join in, right? Which is a way of illustrating rather than saying, here's how we bear this great suffering.
Mm.
We just... break open to it. Mm-hmm. And here, and you and I are doing this in the middle of 700 people, most of whom have been bullshitting for the last half hour.
Right.
That isn't, it's so liberating. I know when I've worked with people, and I've been in grief myself. Mm. If somebody comes in and wants to fix me, that's a very different kind of thing from, wow, this hurts. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can bear it because we're bearing it right now in this moment. Very different thing than, don't worry, which is what you're afraid of. And also a very different thing from, no, no, you're going to be fine.
Don't say that.
Mm-hmm. Unless somebody, as you say, clearly needs that. Mm-hmm. Right? And so the discernment, the teachers learn to discern. Through making lots of mistakes.
That's good.
Well, and I think it's the same for all of us. All of us are teachers sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, a friend comes and says, you know, my girlfriend just broke up with me and my life is over. Mm-hmm. You know, and how do we genuinely meet someone? You know, as Melissa was saying, the tendency is to want to fix. You know, someone comes to me and they're sad, and I feel uncomfortable because they're sad, so I want them not to be sad, so I'll try to give them solutions. But I think this person of no rank teaching is much more about meeting in whatever's here. And Kate, that's what I hear you wanting too. It's not like, yeah, whatever. Yeah, it's like, wow, this is, this is intense. Mm-hmm. And also not saying, yeah, you probably can't live with it.
Yeah. Right.
But so it's not fixing and it's not dismissing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Both, you know, turning away and touching are both wrong. But this being present with, then it's not me doing something to you or you doing something to me, but us meeting in some place that where we're both touched.
That's a great question. And I really commend you for the question, because it can sound like whatever.
Well,
and it's never
tempting as hell, right?
Yeah.
Like, emptiness, cool. Yeah. I'll go hurt some people, speed, you know. Yeah. Eat cookies for dinner. Like, emptiness,
wild thing.
Cookies for dinner.
All of my squad.
That's true freedom.
Put that woman behind bars.
Really?
That's going right along.
Don't get any bright ideas, Jason.
Yeah, Jason.
Meatballs and cookies for dinner. Tomorrow night's menu. I just have to interject here, because I've been thinking about it ever since you told the story with the Dalai Lama. I, too, was in a big meeting with the Dalai Lama, thousands of people. This was down in Washington, D.C. It was a mindfulness conference showing how mindfulness is effective in solving all the world's problems.
Yes,
the Dalai Lama had a really bad cold. And so these people are saying, you know, it really helps with the immune system. It helps improve the immune system. And here's the charts and the stuff. And it really helps, you know, you be a better, happier person. And you can live longer. And the Dalai Lama is right up near the microphone going, oh! And then finally it's his turn to say something. And he often does speak English.
Yes.
Good English. But
when
he wants to. So this time he said in English, sometimes it doesn't help.
Yes.
It's like a whole bunch of us
with it. Yeah. Sometimes you get colds.
Sometimes people die.
Yeah.
Right? And sometimes people die. And there's no way through that except through it. Yeah. Sometimes you're just sick. And right? This is what. Sometimes you're just sick.
Yeah.
Although I read an article that drinking the right amount of coffee reduces the mortality rate.
Right. It's less than 100%?
Apparently.
Oh, wow. I like that.
Some 12%. You know, you all know the joke, mortality in this country, the rate, the percentage is 100%.
The other thing that strikes me about all this is the gift of our need.
Mm.
Like, so this woman did not have an intellectual interest. She was not trying to make a point, but Diane, as you said, her great courage was to show up with her need, which is usually what we think is what's wrong with us. Well, if I didn't need anything, then I could be cool like the people up on stage, but but there's something about the genuineness of, you know, what is your question? What is it that's really important to you? And for us to clarify that, what is it, you know, I really want? Or and when we come forward with that, then, you know, as you say, the whole room, one person showing up authentically, then changes the field of the whole room. It's such a gift.
Thank you.
Cool. Camden. Oh,
Camden. Yeah, I just wanted to say real quick, this ability to show up and to meet someone on the same ground, on this kind of place of no rank, I know it's been probably the most attractive thing about this place to me, in terms of I've never felt so unabidedly cared for and just met with this overwhelming compassion, not only from the teachers, but from everybody else here. And it's the fact that this place, I feel, just cultivates this ground of being with other people. Just being able to be with other people through whatever they may be going. I just thank you. 'Cause I don't think that there's really much more power in like the whole realm of healing that I've ever at least witnessed for myself, I guess, but it's been wonderful. And so, yeah, that being with people, that's meeting people, yes.
Yeah, that's so beautifully said. And you know, we do this for each other and we do it for all beings. We're practicing for everybody, every being.
Well, okay. Sit for a few moments.